Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. Today is December the 29th, 2010. Today is my 69th birthday. During these 69 years, I have studied the United States through the news media, both here and abroad, day by day. And I have become increasingly alarmed as the years have gone by, especially in the last 30 or 40 years, in which I began to recognize that my country is a tyrant around the world. It's a tyrant not only to people in other nations and cities, but it's a tyrant to its own people. I can tell you this from personal recollection. I, too, have been singled out for United States attention due to my website, JewWatch News. Several Jews, specifically Chertov and Mukasey, of the Homeland Security and Department of Justice, decided to attack me several years ago because of my website and because of my newspaper and my views. They didn't like these views. They felt somehow that as persons who are tied to the federal government, that they had a right to come after my civil rights and try to destroy my civil rights. I learned a lot during this situation. I learned that the United States itself is a kind of sickened USSR, that as I had talked with federal agents about what they were trying to do, that I was actually living not in the United States, but in what used to be the Judeo-Bolshevik USSR. Because what was happening to me was more like what happened to people in Moscow and in Petrograd under the Jewish rule of the Soviet Union from 1917 to 1940, in which millions of people were murdered, and millions of other people were placed into gulags and were basically tortured and harassed, their lives upset, their businesses ruined, all because of the Jewish USSR. And now we have the Jewish-American USSR, run from New York by the Judeo-Bolsheviks who run the banking system. Now, I had spoken for years about the federal government being a government filled with lies, but I began to study it in earnest after what had happened to me under the tenure of Michael Chertoff and Mr. Mukasey of the Justice Department, and their activities, which I considered to be quite illegal, but quite indicative of how dastardly the Judeo-Bolsheviks in America had become, and how forthright they were in stopping the civil rights of people. Even after they investigated me and found they had no case against me, they decided to continue to pressure me. Now, I've seen a lot of dissidents in this country go to jail. This is a country of a massive jailing of people who disagree with the government. For instance, I've seen them go after a very mild-mannered journalist by the name of Kevin Alfred Strom. His wife, during a divorce, claimed that he had pictures of young girls that he took from the internet. These allegations were eventually dropped, but not until he was dragged through the scandal-ridden newspapers, who, being Jewish, feasted over this and really enjoyed themselves with it. And I also watched the white people who he wrote for, who just abandoned him to the wolves. You know, if you think that white people, you know, are good people worthy of ruling the world, then you need to think twice, because I have noticed that whenever their leaders are exposed for this or that, that these people immediately hammer on their leaders and abandon them. They have no stick-to-itiveness. They do the work of the Judeo-Bolshevik every time the Judeo-Bolshevik decides that they're going to print a lie about somebody. And these white people who claim to be patriots will just bemoan the fact that this person is this or this person is that, even when it turns out later that it's not the case. So I don't hold much faith in white people to protect themselves. And they've done nothing to protect themselves. They've allowed the Judeo-Bolsheviks, who are globalists, to bring all sorts of non-white people into America and to make the country filthy with these people. And by filthy, I mean these people really don't belong here. And yet you see in the newspapers and among the congressmen all sorts of statements that diversity is our strength, when in fact, when diversity hits somebody's neighborhood, like as not, the neighborhood itself collapses and the people flee as far away as they can get. And you don't see these congressmen living with diverse people. Oh, never. They're able to buy their way out with million-dollar houses that no one from a street culture could even match. So they don't have to put up with it. And they don't move to where the street culture is either. Because basically these congressmen, these senators, and these presidents are a bunch of racists. Yes, that's what they are. Let's call them what they are. They're racist because they have the money to live anywhere they want, and they choose to live only with their own people. And yet, they will then turn around from their racist enclave and point at other people and call them racists. But the real racists are the congressmen and the senators and the expensive government officials who are able to buy their way out of integration. It's always amazed me that it's those who live as far away as possible from people of different cultures who insist that they love these cultures, that these cultures are enriching for a nation, and yet they refuse to live with them because, as I say, these congressmen are racists. The entire United States upper echelon is a racist culture. And yet they pretend, in order to ingratiate themselves with the Judaic Bolsheviks who run the presses and the banks and who keep them in office by giving them the money for their donations, they continue to voice the idea that diversity is our strength as they flee from it and live in their own little Ku Klux Klan area in expensive neighborhoods, which aren't really gated, but which are so expensive to move into that they might as well have an 80-foot gate all the way around it. And any time a black person, oh Lord, drives through their neighborhood, he'll likely be pulled over by the police. And you read about that all the time in the newspapers. And I'm 69 years old now. I've been around a long time, and I've been around long enough to be able to have a certain wisdom about what goes on in America. And what goes on in America is hypocrisy. Hypocrisy. And the higher you go in the society, the grosser the hypocrisy becomes. These people are used to having what they say repeated in the newspapers without too much comment. But no one ever comments that they live in these white Ku Klux Klan areas, where there are no black people, there are no Chinese people, there's no one but themselves. If there's any minorities in the area, they might be 1 or 2%, but that's about it. And yet they think that their area is being inundated by diversity, and they don't like it, because they're hypocrites and they're racists. And like I say, the newspapers never point this out. How many times have you heard a newspaper pointing out that people who live in a almost totally white area might be racist. Or the people who live in a totally black area who are black might be racist. I remember when Clinton decided he was going to put his office in Harlem, because other areas of New York didn't want it, so he thought, well, I'll just put it in Harlem then. Guess what happened? Sharpton and other leaders got up and said, well, we don't want you putting this in Harlem next to the Apollo Theater because we are against the gentrification of Harlem. What they meant was they didn't want any rich white cracker moving in there with expensive offices. They didn't want any white cracker moving in there at all because they were racists. They wanted Harlem to stay totally black because there was a black culture there and they wanted to preserve it. Now, when white people say the same thing, when they say when blacks move in or somebody wants to put a black development into a white area, they say things like, we don't want any riffraff. That's usually what they say. They don't like to say blacks. They say, well, we're afraid that this will bring riffraff into our neighborhood, and so we're against it. Well, we don't think that you should try to change the flavor of the culture that we have here, and we're afraid that what will happen is you'll simply bring in riffraff, and there will be crime, and there will be this, and there will be that. Now, this is kind of the nice way of being a racist. You call blacks riffraff, and it's okay. If you call them blacks, and you don't want them in there, well, that's kind of bad. But if you call them riffraff, I've always noticed this, that it's okay to call them that. You're not usually called a racist if you call them riffraff. I mean, it's amazing. It's an amazing country. If you have the right word choice, you could be as racist as you want, such as most senators and congressmen. I don't know of any senators and congressmen who have decided to move into an integrated area. For instance, in St. Louis, the integrated areas would be where there's a lot of black people would be North St. Louis or East St. Louis. Do you think that the senators of the state of Missouri would move there? Not on your life they wouldn't, and not on theirs either. And if they moved there, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The blacks who live in that area would tell them to get the hell out, that they don't want their area gentrified, that they like it the way it is, and they don't want white people coming up and buying their property up cheap and driving their own people out of that area. And we saw that done with Clinton in Harlem a few years ago, and I just mentioned it. And you would see the same thing in North St. Louis. The racist blacks would not want the whites to gentrify the area and push them out. Now, it's okay for the blacks to come into a poor white area and push the whites out with bad behavior, but it's not good for a white to move into a black area and do just the opposite. I tell you, I have so much fun living in America and watching the hypocrisy. It's so bizarre that the humor that you can have with it comes about so fast that you can't really have any fantasy that you might have about what's happening that you wanted to even make up. You couldn't make it up fast enough to get as far ahead of life as the reality has. Because the reality is that most Americans are racist and they want to live in their own area with their own people. And black separatism, white separatism, Jewish separatism, Chinese separatism, Vietnamese separatism, these things are endemic in America. And this is what people do. They talk with their mouth about how they love integration, but their living area, their geography, is all about segregation. Because they're hypocrites. But the one thing is that they just love to accuse other people of racism. And they always do it from the area that they live in, which has their own people in it and not anybody else's people. You take a look at people who talk about racism, and if you could talk to them while they're giving a speech and they start talking about that sort of thing, the first thing you need to ask them is, where do you live? 99% of the cases, they're going to live either in a white area that I call a white Ku Klux Klan area, because it'll be all white, or a black Ku Klux Klan area, which will be all black. Because that's what people want to do. They want to live in an area with their own people. And like I say, the Chinese do it. They go to Chinatown. The Jews go to Jewish areas. And they will turn around and point their finger at other people as being racist. The really interesting thing about the hypocrisy in Washington, D.C. is the manner in which the congressmen are always voting for civil rights issues. They want to appeal to black groups and Jewish groups, and sometimes, but not very often, I mean, it's pretty rare to appeal to a white group. That's something they just normally don't do. But they love to look the other way when somebody's getting more than their share if they are a minority. For instance, if you have a larger percentage of blacks entering Harvard Law School than their numbers in society, that's looked at as being okay, because they need to have a head start to work their way toward what the whites have. Well, it doesn't matter that the whites, who had nothing to do with the way in which the situation got that way to begin with, are being discriminated against. It doesn't matter at all. But if one black person were not chosen so that a white person could go to a school, then the trumpets in the Judeo-Bolshevik press would suddenly start playing a symphony of griping. Because the Judeo-Bolsheviks are basically Russian globalists. The Russian globalists became that way when the New York Jews traveled to Petrograd and Moscow in the 1920s to run the Soviet Union, taking their communism with them, and then began to infiltrate the Russian society, telling the people exactly how things were going to go, because basically the Judeo-Bolsheviks from New York ran the whole show. They ran the newspapers, they ran the KGB, and if you did something the KGB didn't like, you're probably going to be dead in no time. And so they had this country, which was kind of a horror story, and now that they've moved back to the United States and to New York, and they have three members on the Supreme Court, and more than their share in the FBI, the CIA, the Department of Justice, Homeland Security. They use their numbers, their false numbers, which, like I say, don't represent their 1 or 2% of demographics in the country. They have a much larger number of people at the top of these organizations that make these decisions that others have to follow, because they're an unfair people. They're a vicious criminal element of mafia that likes to dominate every country they live in. And everybody's been trained not to mention this, except that I will mention it. And I know a few other people that will mention it too. And I only tell the truth. I know what I observe with these folks. I know that a few years ago, the Harvard student newspaper was accused of being racist because every top staff member and every reporter was Jewish. And this was covered in the news. So finally all the Jews decided that they'd had enough, and they resigned all of their positions at once. But they used their positions to appoint other people to take over. And I noticed that these people that they appointed were all minorities. And many of them were from the Middle East areas. You know, like Jordanians and this and that, and Iraqis, you know, people with names like Fahid and stuff like that. But they didn't appoint any white people. They didn't appoint any Tom Browns or Jeff Smiths. And I thought about it, and I realized from their patterns of behavior that they hate white people. That as a prejudiced, religious, semi-racist racial group, that the Judeo-Bolsheviks hated Europeans. Well, that's why we have integration the way we have it, and immigration. The integration always affects white communities and never affects black or other communities or Jewish communities. They don't give money for white people to move into a Jewish community and destroy it. But for blacks to move into a white community and destroy it within 30 years, there's plenty of money for that. That's a great thing to do. Let's destroy the Europeans in these cities. Let's push them further and further away, force them to buy a new house and continue to waste their money on loans that are supplied by Jewish banks. Because they hate us, and they exploit us terribly. Look at the physicians and the lawyers at Harvard, which is run by Jewish people. Now, that university was started by John Harvard, who donated a library of books. The university was named after him, and it was a Protestant Christian university. And now it's a Jewish university. It's basically run by Jewish people, and you have the prestigious Jewish-run John F. Kennedy School of Law, which was a political law school type of operative. And the people who ran it printed a book that the Jews didn't like. In fact, the two that printed it were Jewish themselves, and they waited till the end of their career to do it and to publish it, and it was called The Bell Curve. And they also gave a report, and the Jewish donor to that school, the biggest donor, said he didn't want the report saying Harvard School of JFK School on the report. So they took that off the report. And on and on and on. I mean, you know, these people are control freaks. And if you'll watch what happens in the news, you'll understand that they are control freaks. And I think it's because it's just endemic with them. They did the same thing in the Soviet Union when they ruined millions and millions of lives for their own selfishness and their own racism against the Europeans who lived in the areas where they lived. Their racism against the Palestinians is the same thing in Israel. They don't mind killing a Palestinian. They refer to them as insects. Because these are racist people who have no respect for other races. If you're not Jewish, you're considered a goyim, which is basically means your cattle. Your cattle to be harvested or to be exterminated at a moment's will by these people. This is their philosophy. And I don't like mentioning these things in my news show, but it's just the way that it is. I mean, just look it up. Look up in Google, look up Jews versus Goyim, G-O-Y-I-M, and see what you come up with. I mean, don't trust me, and remember that Google is owned by some Jews, so go to Google and look up what the Jews say about it. Because they own Google, so look up Jews versus Goyim. Jews vs. Goyim. And see what it says. And you'll get an eyeful. You will. And you'll see that they have statements in their ancient books that say that it's okay to kill a Goyim. It's okay to charge interest to a Goyim, but it's not okay to charge interest to a Jew. And on and on and on. All of these things show their endemic racism. A racism that they've been cleverly able to hide by owning almost all of the newspapers and all of the media and the movies. Where they, especially if you look at, well, let me put it this way. I went to the movies a few months ago, and they had these trailers. You know, these previews. And they were showing the previews. And in each one of these previews, they basically showed stupid white people and very smart, sophisticated black people who were able to help the white people out to get their lives in order. I mean, it was so obvious that it was racist and that it was a Jewish Bolshevik concept that it was just ridiculous. In fact, the people in the theater, not myself, but other people in the theater that I didn't even know who they were laughing at it. They were shouting that it was Jewish racism by the media. People know what's going on here and they resent it. I mean, the Europeans have been pushed severely in America. They're being replaced by all of these other people. And it was all planned by several despicable Jewish people. I can give you their names. The first one was Manuel Seller. And he started doing this. He started with a bill that seemed innocuous enough. He wanted the people in the Navy who were stationed in China and who had Chinese wives to be able to bring their wives home. Now, nobody could really argue with that. Even a racist down south, you know, the man's married to the woman, let him bring the woman in. So he got that law passed, but then he immediately started pushing another law. And that law was that he wanted people who were not European and not Christian to have the first in line to come to the United States, because Manuel Seller said that the United States had been racist against other people, and so we needed to change things so that we could have a racial mix that we would have had if we hadn't been prejudiced against these other people. Well, of course, nations are prejudiced against other people. The English didn't make England for the French, and they constantly warred with the French. The French didn't make France for the Germans, and they always warred against the Germans and tried to keep them out of France. Same with the Italians versus the French versus the Spanish, the Christians versus the Muslims, the Jews versus the Palestinians in Israel. This is what nations do. A nation building is when you drive all other people out except your own. And nation destruction means that you let other people into your nation who are not like you at all, and that's the way you tear a nation apart. You dissemble a nation. You destroy a nation by destroying its people and mixing them with others. Because a nation is basically an area where people have something in common with each other, where they can look at each other and see that they belong in that country. And if you bring people in from to America, from Northern Africa, Southern Africa, South America, China, etc., you're going to make a lot of people very unhappy, because they have a right to expect that their country will stay the same, and that the group of people that they have become over the last 225 years will remain the same. Because it used to be that we could look at Americans, we could tell who we were. We were either black or we were white. We had the same English as our language pattern. Most of us were Christian, and we allowed a few tiny numbers of Jews, 1, 2, 3%, to live in peace in the country. But the Jews didn't like that. They decided they wanted to control the country. A minority wanting to control the majority. That's what they wanted, and that's what they have been able to accomplish. These Judeo-Bolsheviks, what they're doing is they are pushing their communism onto the blacks, onto the whites, and onto the Mexicans and the other immigrants to this country whom they have brought in through their subversion of our people. These are traitors. These Judeo-Bolsheviks are the same people that were traitors to the Russians in the Soviet Union and murdered 65 million of them. And now they're the traitors to the whites and the blacks and the Hispanics who've been in America for several hundred years. They are the traitors to these people. And they don't mind putting three Jewish people on the Supreme Court when, you know, that represents, out of nine people, that represents a third of the court. And yet they're only 3% of America, which means that they don't have the numbers to even have a single member on the court. They shouldn't have one. They don't have the numbers. This is a democracy. And they've made it into a minoritocracy. They've made it to where minorities rule. You've got 3 Jews and 6 Catholics on the Supreme Court. And it's a Protestant nation. Where are the Protestants? Where are the Protestants in this country on the Supreme Court? There's not a one. 3 Jews and 6 Catholics. I don't want to say any more. I don't have to say any more. What these Judeo-Bolsheviks have done to our Supreme Court is to make it into a non-representative monstrosity, which is exactly what they wanted to do. They wanted to rub this monstrosity in your face so that you would be so demoralized that you wouldn't do anything to save yourself. That's what they want. The same thing that they did on the Harvard newspaper when they were forced out because they had all the positions on the Harvard newspaper. They made sure that white people, not one white person, got one position on that newspaper. They made sure it was non-whites. Because they hate white people. They are the haters in America. And all you have to do is look at how they were the ones that decided to change the racial and religious makeup of this country to suit themselves as a kind of social experiment, because they are traitors and they are basically Judeo-Bolsheviks. And they are the capitalists and they are the communists in America. And they're also the neocons who pretended that they were conservatives and got us to go into the wars against Iraq and against Afghanistan. Like I say, they're traitors and you have to know them as such. Never trust a Judeo-Bolshevik. Look at the history of their wrongdoing in this country and you will never appoint them to anything. I'm sure that by now many of you are shocked, thinking, well, this man must be a complete racist. Well, it might behoove you to know that in my earlier days, I was a civil rights activist. I was a member of the student nonviolent coordinating committee, the student NAACP at the University of Missouri. I was in SDS at the University of Missouri. I was a left-wing radical, and I was pro-black. I thought they had a right to have a chance to see what they could do in this country. I thought that was the fair thing to do. I was very idealistic, and I still think blacks have a right to do things in this country, and I think that many blacks have distinguished themselves in America, and I'm the first to say that. And I live in an area where there's lots of black people. I live in the city of St. Louis. Now, it doesn't get much blacker than that unless you live in East St. Louis. But, you know, I looked up the number of white people in East St. Louis, and a few years ago there were still something like 12 to 15% whites living in East St. Louis. Everybody laughs about East St. Louis because they consider it all black. Did you know that East St. Louis used to be a poor white community? And that in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, somewhere back then, it was designated as the all-American city? I don't know if it was Time magazine that designated that, or Life magazine, but it was some magazine like that, one of the big ones, that designated East St. Louis as an all-American city. And I have... I've spent time in East St. Louis. There used to be a joke, by the way, that, you know, it was a Bob Hope joke. He said, I spent a week in East St. Louis one night. I heard him say that joke about 40 years ago at the auto show in St. Louis. And he had some other corny jokes like, did you see the new Skoda? It's the one with the chains. Escoda was made in Yugoslavia, which was communist. And everybody thought that the communists, everything had to be in chains with them. And it was a mark of patriotism to always put the communists down. And they had done some really bad stuff, and they were Judeo-Bolsheviks. But they had been exploited by the bankers of New York, who were the Judeo-Bolsheviks who started the Soviet Union. So the same people that were punishing white people in the Soviet Union through murder, through incarceration, through gulags, that these Judeo-Bolsheviks ran themselves. These same people have been running America and running IPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee. They're the people who have penetrated Christianity with this fake Zionist Christianity. We're Christians who have a religion that was persecuted by Jewish people when the religion was first formed in Jerusalem. And the members of the Sanhedrin sent St. Paul out to inform on the Christians, to get them arrested, and even to execute them if possible, until he converted to Christianity himself, according to the story. But Christianity was extremely anti-Semitic. Jesus himself said that his church was like a field where a good man planted wheat, and an evil man, who he later said was Satan and the Jews, planted weeds inside the field. And he said that the wheat were his people, the Christians, and that the field was his church, and the people should harvest the wheat and then burn out the Jews, the tares of wheat. And that's what he called them, the Jews. I don't make these things up. Look it up. Look up the tares of wheat. And, ask the question, who are the Jews in the tares of wheat? Who is Jesus in the tares of the wheat? And it will lead you to those quotations in the Bible. And early Christianity was extremely anti-Semitic, because everywhere St. Paul would go, the Jews would come out of their synagogues and try to chase him out of town, and they would try to get the Roman curators to remove them from the city also, so that he couldn't preach Christianity. Because they hated Christians. They hated Christianity. They hate almost everybody in this world. You know, President Truman said that the Jews were the most selfish people that he had ever met. That they wanted everything for themselves, and they wanted no one else to have anything. And Kissinger himself agreed with this type of an attitude. Kissinger's Jewish, but he's had these lapses of sanity in which he mentions that the Jews have been their own worst enemy, and that they have basically destroyed things for all the other people of the world. And he said recently that he thought that a Holocaust in which the Jews were murdered would be okay. And that was in the newspaper just several weeks ago. And that was by the Jewish person, Kissinger. And he had to apologize for it. He had to publicly apologize for it. Well, there was a tax protester in another story that's a little bit different than what I'm talking about. But since taxes are for the Judeo-Bolsheviks to fill their bank coffers with federal money every year, that's why you pay these income taxes. I don't know if you know that or not, but that's exactly what they're for. And John Keynes, who came up with the income tax, he wrote a book, What Happens After World War One. And he says, well, what's going to happen is we don't have all this money to spend on the war. So what we're going to do is we're going to have an income tax. And the extra money that we're printing and running through these banks with the Federal Reserve, we will have an income tax that will take just that same amount of money as we printed out of the economy, so we won't have any inflation. That was printed in 1918. At any rate, a tax protester, Richard Simkinen, died in prison just yesterday. His friend was Daniel Schenzing of Keene, Texas, who said that Simkinen had been experiencing weakness, chest pain, and had a large lump on his chest. And he was 67 at the time of his death. He had been released from prison earlier this year, but jailed again after claims of violation of his terms of release. He had served 7 years in a federal prison after refusing to withhold taxes from his employees at his Bedford, Texas plastics business. He had been sentenced to an additional 7 years after his alleged violation of terms of release. Dick Simkinen stood up for America and for all American workers and for all American business owners when he decided in 2000 that his company was no longer going to participate in the withholding racket, and which was forced and demanded by laws from Congress. Well, that's I find that very, very interesting that somebody cared enough to do that and to stand up for America, and then was put into prison for sticking up for people and for doing the right thing. And of course, the evil federal government, there's nothing more evil in the world than the American government. I know that because they came after me and I had done nothing. And I started AmericanUSSR.com in order to show people the evils that their country has committed over the last several hundred years. And I have recorded every evil there that I can find that this country's done. Well, this man who just died was indicted after the government tried 3 times to indict him to no avail. And a grand jury finally indicted him in June of 2003, and he was arrested, and the criminal legal battle was on. The case of Dick Simkinen, the owner of Arrow Custom Plastics in Bedford, Texas, who stopped withholding income taxes from paychecks. He appealed to his representatives about questions pertaining to the law that required him to withhold, and he got no answer from them. No one ever came up with an answer as to where the law says he would have to withhold these taxes. Neither the 2001 nor the 2002 grand juries would indict Simkinen for failure to withhold and turn over the tax. However, after the criminal Department of Justice of the United States of America prevented Simkinen from appearing before the grand jury in 2003, that grand jury indicted him. See, that's the trouble with this country. It's unfair. It's a criminal enterprise. America's always been a criminal enterprise, and the federal government especially is a criminal enterprise in which the rich and the filthy rich run everything. Following a hearing before a magistrate judge, Simkinen was released without bail to his own recognizance in 2003 after a grand jury indicted him. But days later, a federal district judge, John McBride, accepting hearsay over direct evidence, ruled that Simkinen was a flight risk and a threat to society. And he ordered Simkinen jailed pending his trial, which is currently scheduled for October the 6th. He's been in jail all this time. Anyway, Simkinen's defense rested on the fact that he has committed no crime and that there's no law requiring him to withhold. So there you have it. The United States. What a piece of junk. What a piece of junk. And you live it and I live in it. I'd like to move out myself. I don't like this place anymore. I've been threatened with imprisonment for 99 years. They said that I collected money for Jew Watch by telling people I was collecting for Katrina victims. Well, then when the FBI investigated, they found out I hadn't collected a dime. and that I hadn't spent a dime out of my accounts either. Nothing. It was just sitting there. Nothing ever happened. Well, I made it impossible for them to do anything, but then they threatened me with wire fraud. They said, well, they could do that, and a lot of people were convicted on wire fraud over nothing. And I didn't want to get convicted, so somebody came up with this crazy confession for me to sign. I said, well, I'm not going to sign that. That's a piece of crap. Well, if you don't sign it, then you're gonna be prosecuted for up to 99 years. I said, well, let me see a lawyer. Oh, no, you can't see a lawyer. And the reason was, I suppose, that we have this Patriot Act now where nobody has any rights to anything. So I have no use for the United States of America. Sometimes I go to bed praying that the Lord will, and I don't even believe in the Lord all that much, that he will blow up the caldera in Wyoming and burn everybody from Wyoming all the way to Washington, D.C. and all the way to England. Burn them with the magma flying out of the huge caldera of volcanoes. Because that's how much I dislike America now. I've been taught what a horrible nation it is indeed, and how it's been lying for its entire history, how it's lied to its own people, how it supported the evil Judeo-Bolsheviks all over the world, and how it's a useless piece of junk. It is. It's an useless piece of junk that no one should support. No one. Because it hates you. If you live here, well, let it be known that it hates you. Absolutely it hates you. And you need to be appraised of that. Never be loyal to a country that hates you. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous place to live. It's been at war all my life. I was born in 1941. We had World War II. We're supposed to hate Hitler and Emperor Hirohito. And as soon as that was over, then they went after Stalin. Then they went after Mao. Then they went after the North Koreans. Then they went after the Vietnamese. And they decided to ensconce themselves in the middle of their civil war, which is what it was. That's what the Vietnamese thought. They thought it was a civil war. But our Bolsheviki government decided that it was a communist versus capitalist thing. And the Judeo-Bolsheviks are capitalists. I know they call themselves communists, but you see, Bolshevism and capitalism are the same because you have to have capitalism in order to have either one of them. These people deal in capitalism. They deal in screwing people. They deal in unfair contracts. They deal in forcing people to spend thousands of dollars just to buy a house when the Judeo-Bolsheviks had no finger in the building of the house, but they want 2/3 of the profit from selling it in interest. And you're the one that has to pay it. You're the one that carries them on your back and pays them so much interest that they're able to buy your newspaper in your hometown and propagandize you with it and tell you how much you're a hated person because you're white. And to listen to them, your whole history is a history of unfairness toward blacks and towards Indians. You know, you gave the Indians blankets with smallpox. You beat blacks with whips. And yet you can look at all these hundreds of pictures of black people with their shirts off in the Civil War and find not one of them with a whip mark on his back, except for a single person that has hundreds of whip marks. And you see that photo, that single photo, reproduced all the time as though that is representative of every single black person that was ever a slave. Where, as a matter of fact, slavery was just an economical system. And the blacks were treated just as nicely on plantations as they were treated at the Chevy plant down the street from me. You don't have to whip people to get them to do things for you. You feed them, you house them, you take care of their children when they're sick. and they'll work for you. This is what human beings have been doing for centuries. But the Judeo-Bolsheviks, who hate the white people, the Europeans, they have given you a head trip, telling you that that you hated black people and that you're unworthy because of that. And as a matter of fact, you didn't hate anybody. You were here like everybody else, working your rear end off on a farm that your own children had to clear the land so that you could have a little farm. You had to burn out the trees. You had to plow the land with wooden plows. You worked yourself to death. Your kids worked themselves to death, just as the slaves did. There was no difference between your kids and a slave. They all worked for nothing. And that was the way in which the economy worked. And you don't hear the Judeo-Bolsheviks telling the whites that they're terrible because they enslaved their children and made them plow their farms without paying them. No, you only hear that you killed the Indians and that you enslaved the blacks and forced them to work for you. Because that's a Judeo-Bolshevik view of the world. That people created these oppressive situations. And this is why you need communism. So that Judeo-Bolsheviks can save you from yourself. And help you to get justice under the law, which under Judeo-Bolshevik law, you're never going to get. I know it's not nice to say that I hate America. But what am I supposed to do when America comes down on me, accusing me of fraud, finding out I didn't commit any fraud, they had no evidence, and they still want to stop my my newspaper on the web? You know, and threaten me with incarceration. What am I supposed to say about a nation that would do that? I mean, they did me a favor. The scales have fallen from my eyes. I began to look at the real history of the United States and what it says to its people. And remarkably, the country can't stop lying. America is the biggest liar in the world today. The United States goes around kicking people about, using their navy to threaten others with bombing of their cities and the killing of thousands of people if they don't play the game right and do what the United States wants. Maybe somebody tried that with America and said, we got a navy close to you now, and if you don't do what we want, we're going to bomb New York, or we're going to bomb San Francisco, or we're going to bomb Miami. Well, we'd have a fit. But our government thinks it's just fine to do this to other people. They think it's fine to criticize Iran for having a nuclear reactor and making nuclear-grade materials. That this is terrible that Iran could possibly do that when, as a matter of fact, the United States has 20,000 nuclear weapons in its arsenal and is the only country in the world that's dropped it on defenseless cities like Nagasaki and Hiroshima, not to mention dropping a hydrogen bomb on the Samoan Islands, removing the people from their islands in a Wetok, and blowing these bombs up, which irradiated their land and destroying their culture and their society, and then taking them back there where they live now in their radioactive island. This is the evil United States of America. The United States of America also, believe it or not, has been guilty of injecting little girls with plutonium. I'm going to move over right now on my computer, which I have on my lap, AmericanUSSR.com. I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to look these stories up. Let's see here. America's Lies and Deceptions, Gulf of Tonkin, 9/11, America's Fake War on Terror, America's Fake Cold War, Pearl Harbor, the USS Maine, the USS Liberty, Israel's so-called special relationship, and on and on and on. America and USSR's human rights abuses, including torture, rendition, and murder. You know, we've got that torture club going on down there at Guantanamo. We've been torturing those poor Arabs down there now. There's no proof they did anything wrong. They've never gone to trial. They've been down there for 10 years. It's like Nazi Germany down there. It's terrible. United States of America. What a junk country. Let's take a look at what America's done here. In 1845, J. Marion Sims, the father of gynecology in the United States, conducted gynecological experiments on slaves in South Carolina. In 1874, Cincinnati physician Robert Bartholow conducts brain surgery experiments on Mary Rafferty, a 30-year-old domestic servant dying of an infected ulcer. In 1892, another unethical experiment. Dr. Albert Neisser injects women with serum from patients with syphilis, infecting half of them. Yeah, this is the United States, folks. I call it the American USSR, the American Soviet Union, or the American Union of Socialist Republics. Soviet Socialist Republics. In 1896, another little American deal here, Dr. Arthur Wentworth performed spinal taps on 29 children at Children's Hospital in Boston to determine if the procedure's harmful. How'd you like him to do that to your kid, huh? He performed 29 spinal taps on 29 children at a children's hospital in Boston to determine if the procedure was harmful. It's your country. This is your America. Suck it up, folks. This is the truth. Walter Reed, in 1900, injects 22 Spanish immigrant workers in Cuba with the agent for yellow fever, paying them $100 if they survive and $200 if they contract the disease. Yeah, baby, it's really sweet. What else did America do? Well, in 1906, I guess that wasn't enough, Dr. Richard Strong, a professor of tropical medicine at no other place but none other but Harvard University, experiments with cholera on prisoners in the Philippines, killing 13 of them. I just love it. You know, I hate to bring these things up, but I mean, this is, I'm telling you the truth here. It's right up there at AmericanUSSR.com. You can go up there and check it, and the sources are right there too. In 1915, this was about 90 years ago, U.S. Public Health Office induces pellagra in 12 Mississippi prisoners. All the prisoners are, however, volunteers, and after the experiment, they're cured with proper diet and released from prison. So that one wasn't too bad. I love this one, though. This was the next one. 1919 to 1922, guess what we have here? Testicular transplant experiments on 500 prisoners at San Quentin. Let me repeat that. Testicular transplant experiments on 500 prisoners at San Quentin, California. Now, how would you like to be a prisoner in San Quentin and be among the 500 that had your testicle transplanted to somebody else and vice versa? It's the United States. You gotta love it, don't you? You know, this big humanitarian nation you've always heard about? I've collected all the evidence about what America's done. And I'm making it known to you and to every citizen of this world because they came after me. And I looked in their eyes and I saw the devilishness of these agents and of these people who could care less about me. And it was just like looking into the eyes of the Judeo-Bolsheviks in Moscow and in Petrograd. And I knew that I had to do something to alarm people as to the trash that people live in here. Now, while they were doing this to me and taking away my right to publish, the president was announcing that America was a humanitarian country that stood up for the right of everyone to publish. Except for Frank Welner. You see, it left a real sour taste in my stomach, so I decided that I was going to tell the truth about America. That I wasn't going to let them get by with all these lies about how good this country is when, in fact, it is the precursor of evil in this world. And it's the one country that goes around with fleets of ships, squadrons of planes, and bombs people, killing women and children inside their own homes, and then lies about it and says, oh, they were terrorists. Why? Because America, which lies all the time, says so. The liar says so. America, the liar, says so. That's why. And I'll tell you what. In my 69 years, I've come to the conclusion that if America says something, it's a lie. That's what America does. It lies. It has the CIA. It's got the FBI that's lied knowingly about people sending them to their death. America's a liar. Its police forces are liars. They force people into confessions that they know are untrue, even following them to the gallows. And even though they know the people were innocent. America's a liar. Anytime that you hear a president or anyone else tell you something on the TV, you need to understand that they're being told a lie. That's what's happening. The big lie is that this is a humanitarian country. Let's take a look at this. In 1931 in America, Dr. Cornelius Rhodes, under the auspices of the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Investigations, infects human subjects with cancer cells. Do you like that? This is America. In America, Dr. Cornelius Rhodes, in 1931, under the auspices of the renowned Rockefeller Institute for Medical Investigations, Rockefeller's a kind of Judeo-Bolshevik, claims to be Christian, but he comes from the Rockenfeld family of Jews in Amsterdam. Anyway, in the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Investigation, he infects human subjects with cancer cells. I love that. That's the most beautiful thing. What a beautiful country that would infect people with cancer cells. I just love it. He later goes on to establish the U.S. Army Biological Warfare Facilities in Maryland, Utah, and Panama, and is named to the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission. While there at the Atomic Energy Commission, he begins a series of radiation exposure experiments on American soldiers and civilian hospital patients. The humanitarian America. You see? It's a nation of liars. And I'm going to give you more on this. You stick with Frank Welner and you're going to know the real truth about America, which is that America is a liar. And that everything you've heard about America is a big, fat, rosy public relations lie to cover up all of the evil things America's done to you and to others. Well, this is the end of my show on my birthday, December 29th, 2010. I am 69 years old, and I've learned a lot of wisdom in that time. But the most wisdom was learned in the last 3 years by peering into the eyes of tormentors who work for the federal government, agents who looked upon me as someone that they could destroy, someone whose civil rights could be trifled with, and there would be nothing, nothing whatsoever that a little old man like myself could do about it. But I bided my time, I tap danced for them, I did whatever they wanted, and finally they let me go. And my answer is to reveal the insanity of the United States of America, the evil of this nation, by exposing all of the evils and lies that this nation has told others over the 225 years that it's existed, the millions of people it's slaughtered, the atomic energy that it's created in order to harass people and to terrify them, the people whom they've exposed to radiation, such as right now in Iraq and Afghanistan with their depleted uranium bombs, where people are developing leukemia at this very moment and will die torturous deaths because of the wicked United States of America and its military, who could care less about anybody's lives anywhere in the world. And I'm going to tell you until the day I die, I'm going to reveal to everyone in the world the horror that is the United States of America, so that you and everyone else will be able to embrace it as my payback for the horror that they foisted upon me. I, an innocent citizen who should have been protected, but who had to deal with the wickedness of these wicked agents and their sadism against me, which just wasn't against me, but they're doing it to tens of thousands of people all over the United States and in Iraq and Afghanistan at this very moment, and down at Gitmo where they're torturing people, and in states like Poland where they send people for indition, where they will be poisoned quietly at the expense of the United States of America. That inhumane Judeo-Bolshevik nation that salutes the bankers who care only about money, and salutes the Zionists who used to be the Red Bolsheviks of Russia, and who again care only about killing in Israel, the killing of the native population. They're the same as the Americans here, killed off its native population and had no regrets in doing it, because this is a sadistic nation, and that's my payback. And I feel very good about this. Very, very good about it. And please, stay tuned to my radio show so that you can embrace the horror. Because you, as an American, you need to know the horror. And you need to embrace the horror. And maybe by embracing it, you will be able to change things. I doubt it. But there's always that chance.